The war had ended, but not the suffering. While the war raged, the wounded had been desperate to rejoin their companies, to fight beside men they'd had to leave behind. We'd had to be on guard against the tricks they used to prove they were up to returning to the front. They were remarkably clever at it. Those who'd been given their blighty ticket were often too ill to think beyond whether they would live through the night. But I knew from experience that once they began to recover, their thoughts flew back to France, to the fighting, where they felt they ought to be. That need often helped them heal. Now, with peace, there were no comrades to return to. For others, like the patients I worked with, their war had finished in quite a different sense. I spent December in a base hospital in France, tending to the wounded who hadn't yet been ticketed for England. Many of them had been brought in during the last 10 days of the war. Serious wounds that we now had time to deal with here. Most were amputees, fighting infection as well as the loss of a limb. There were gas cases too, burns, and more than a few damaged faces. As Christmas approached, a good many of the patients in the wards had lost even the incentive to recover. Too often they feared being a burden on their families, to be pitied by wives and sweethearts, to be told that the position they'd held before the war, whether as a tenant farmer or a bank manager, had already been taken by someone else. Someone whole. There were no shaving mirrors for those with burns or damaged jaws, but they already knew how terrifyingly hideous they were. They only had to look at the man in the next bed. And the amputees told us over and over again that they would rather be dead than live without a limb. No conquering heroes, these men. No victory parades for them. Our patients were the ultimate reality of war, and a suicide watch was maintained 24 hours of the day. Sadly, there were other men just like them in hospitals spread across northern France and in clinics in England. Many were still in pain, often requiring more surgery, and not fit to travel. I dealt mainly with the amputees, whose stumps ached in the night, or who felt a phantom limb, the lost leg or arm or foot, which itched and burned and throbbed. They were often desperate to find relief. The doctors could explain it away as damaged nerves that hadn't yet realised the limb was gone. These struggled to read signals that no longer existed, remembering what had once been there. For the men experiencing such symptoms, it was bad enough that the limb was lost. The fact that it still tormented them was unbearable. This was the detritus that war left behind. Those who would have no place in the nation they had fought to protect. I did my best to cheer them up, and I held their hands when they wept over letters from home. Well-meant letters, to be sure, but only serving to point up that families were already seeing their loved ones differently. One in particular had begun, "We are trying to do something about the stairs, so that you can have your old room again, but we don't quite know where to start. Perhaps you can ask the other men in your ward how their families are coping, and the rector has promised to call often to keep your spirits up." I came to know the Welsh patients particularly well, for they had enlisted out of the collieries in the valleys, and they already knew all too well that they couldn't go down into the pit again, that the heavy work they'd done at the coalface before the war was physically beyond them now. Most of them had only rudimentary education. They'd followed their fathers and brothers into the pit as soon as they could to bring in more income. Their worried families, asking how they were to live with no prospects of work, lowered the men's spirits even more. I spent a good many of my hours on duty trying to find a way to cheer them. But after a while, even I could see that cheerfulness was beyond men who had lost hope.